session number 16310, real one.
This is an interview with Harold Eager, recorded by Rodney Giesler for the Imperial War Museum Sound Archive in Cadnam, Hampshire, on the 31st of October, 1995.
Tell me when you were born and a bit about your childhood. And
well, I was born in New Haven on the 27th of July, 1900. And I went to school in New Haven up till I was 13. I unfortunately, that time of day, you know, the people weren't earning a lot of money. And I passed the old 11 plus in 1911. And I went home pleased to my parents and said, well, I played 11 plus. I've got to go to college. The college was at Brighton, and to get there I had to go by train. My father was earning 33 shillings a week, and I had to buy all my clothes, all my books and everything, and of course he couldn't afford it.
What was your father doing for a living?
He was coaling, carrying underweights of coal on his back, and going up steps and loading the ships with coal.
Cross-channel ships?
I was on the cross-channel ships then, myself.
Loaded
them with coal.
By hand,
yes. You know, you go up steps, you get an underweight basket on their shoulder, go up the steps, a lot of steps up to the bunkers were just inside the door, they opened the bunker and they tipped the coal in. 60 tons for each ship. You used to start work at 4 o'clock in the morning and come home at dinner time. Now, I went to school, and that time of day, my mother got a bit fed up with me, so she put my age on, and I went to school when I was 3. And consequence of that was that when you become 13, you was allowed to leave school on a certain conditions. Conditions were... Later on, the conditions were that you were 13 years of age, and that you were reached X7. Well, when I went to go to leave school, I went to the headmaster, and he said you'll have to get your birth certificate to prove right. When I got my birth certificate, I was only 12, so I had to do another year at school. I left school when I was 13. Of course, you know, we never had any television, wireless, or cars, or anything, theatres, or nothing. And I went into a barber shop. There was what we called a lather boy. We used to put the lather on the men's faces, and the barber used to come along and shave them. That used to cost them a penny. And then you get tuppence for an haircut. Well, I was there for about 12 months, I suppose.
How much did you earn?
4 shillings a week, working from 8 till 10 o'clock every night. Then I went in a butcher shop along the road for another 2 shillings a week. And...
was that delivering meat?
Delivering meat, on a bicycle. Well, anyhow, I got a bit... My stepbrother was in there. Got to bit up, so he said, look, the war broke out. So he said, look, I can get you a job on the docks with me at New Haven, messenger boy. I used to go in a little office, used to have a telephone, used to have an intercombination, you know, communication, one outside. We used to have to deliver all the messages to the foreman and all loading the ships. We used to work from 1 week from 6 in the morning to 6 at night, and 1 week, and 1 week at 6 at night to 6 the next morning for 10 shillings a week. Well, the war was getting on, and they started loading the stores there, and the officer of the Expeditionary Forces canteens come along and saw me. So he was talking to him. He said, "Do you want a job? Nice job. I'll give you a nice job. £3 a week." Blimey, I said, "I'll take that." All right, he said, "You have to go in uniform." So I was put in uniform. I'll show you the photograph presently. As uniform, as a soldier, putties and all on, for £3 a week. That was it when I was 15. So I first went in khaki, 15. Well, when I stopped there for up till I was just becoming 17. He said, "Look, Harold, if you stop here with me now," he said, "when they call you up," he says, "the war's on at 18. He said, you'll have to go where they put you. Is there anywhere you'd like to go?" I said, "Yes. If I want to go, I'd like to go to the Royal Flying Corps."
Before we come to that, what, you were all at New Haven Docks all this time?
It's all at New Haven Docks, this was.
In uniform?
In uniform.
Yeah.
All in uniform.
What were you, traffic regulation?
No, checker.
Checker?
Oh, you should check all the goods and going over the canteens. NACB was then, Navy Army Canteen Board.
That was before NAPI?
That was before NAPI.
Yeah.
And I got on very well there, and he said, "All right, I want a character." I said, "I got to go to get a character." "All right," he said, "we give you a character." And then I got my papers come through. I took them home, said to my mother and father, "I'm good in the Flying Corps." She said, "What?" I said, "I'm good in the Flying Corps." She said, "You can't go there, you're too young." "Oh," she said, "I cannot, I'll go in as a boy entrant." So they said, he said, "Let him go." So I went, and I was, went to Hove from New Haven, where I passed my test for, you know, a medical. Then I was sent from there to Aldershot Command at Barrajos Barracks. I'd been there about a fortnight, then I was pulled up again and said, "Right, you're going to join the RAF, you'll join the RAF." They're stationed at Wendover in Buckinghamshire. So I said, "All right." So the sergeant said to me, he said, "You know what you're doing, don't you?" I said, "No, why?" "Well," he said, "you know that, don't you?" I said, "No." He said, "You know, I'll give you a little message." He said, "You join the Navy and you see the world, don't you?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "You're going to the Flying Corps, aren't you?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You'll bloody soon see the next one." That was my farewell with the sergeant. And I went to, sent them to Wendover in Buckinghamshire. And this was in 1917. And when I got there, we was all under Aldershot Command. The Sergeant Major, I was under Lieutenant Colonel Bonham Carter. And he was our army, the all army. We had the PI instructors with the Aldershot Command, all the drill sergeants were Aldershot Command people. When I got there, I said, "Come on, take this." It was like a palliasse, like a long thing, and one shaped like a pillow. He said, "Come in here." I went in, I said, "There's your bed there." It was a trestle, two trestles, and three boards on top. "Come on," he said, "come with me." "Where are we going?" He's coming out. Went down the stables and filled this bag with straw. And the pillow, that was my bed. And I was given two blankets to sleep on. And, we said we'd go down now and introduce the dining room. That's the dining room there. Now, he said, "In there, you sit down there," he said. "You'll see a basin on the table. See them?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You drink out of one side and the other boy drinks out the other." He said, "The two boys that sit on the front will go down to the cookhouse with Dixies and pick up the meal and bring it up and serve it out to you on plates." So bet your life. See, the boys, two boys down the bottom, they didn't know what they got. So the two boys up the top there didn't get hardly anything to eat.
Well, the ones who were last?
The first ones didn't. They had to save for the last one. They didn't know who were last out.
Oh, I see.
See? And then you, that was that. He said, now then, your reveille's at 6 o'clock in the morning. He says, up at North Camp. I said, yeah. You'll go on a PT run. 6 o'clock till half past, no, 6 and half past 6, you'll go around the camp, all around your hut, and pick up all the things in there, back, keep the place clean, right? And you'll be a boy who will be an orderly, hut orderly, for the, you take it in turns. And when they do that, you dry scrub that floor till it's white. Right. So he said, and then after that, you'll half past six, you go on the playground, shirts, slacks and putties and boots, and you go on a PT run. We shall run from the camp down to Ashton Clinton, off, because it was up in Lord Rothschild's estate. It went over right down Ashton Clinton and back up. Right, we shall run down there and come back up, and then you used to dress, and before you went anywhere you was inspected. By God help you if you got any, because you had putties then, if you got anything on them. March you up to the hall, and you have your breakfast. God knows what them, I think they made the tea in the bloody soup tureen they made it in, because it tasted like it. And all we had was 2 slices of bread and our breakfast. No butter, 2 slices of bread. And then, right, march back to your billets, got back, right, and fall in, you know, we had a band and all up there, you know. Fall in, went out on the playground, and we was on the playground drilling. Drilling from morning to lunchtime, have a rest, then after lunch, on the square again. I was on the square for just over 6 months. Dressing. And then while I was there, it was made the Royal Air Force. You see, and we've never asked. I was discharged from the army at 12 o'clock, and 1 minute past 12 I was in the Royal Air Force, and I got 2 discharges, one from the army, one from the Air Force. Then after that, I was there about, it was a terrible place, we got had a outbreak of impetigo and scabies and that from there. And we used to have to go get up after we come back at our meal, go down to East Camp and go sit in rows round a tent, round a hut, and be fumigated, blankets and all. This happened for about a fortnight till we cured it. And then after that, when we joined the RNAS, they said, all right, you're posted. You've got to go and learn a trade. So I was sent down to Fort Tregantle. It's in Germans, in Cornwall.
Sorry, you're still in the Royal Air Force, aren't you?
I was in the Royal Air Force then, and they'd amalgamated. The RNS and the Air Force had amalgamated on the 1st of April 1918, when I went from there down to... with them, because it was all one corps then. And we had a laugh there, because the jaunty, as we called him, the sergeant major, get on the deck, on the all ashore on the what's that deck, going to run. Well, anyhow, the old jaunty there, the old POs and that, they come there, they're going to play out with us, didn't they? Going to right. Of course, we've been well trained, we've been rifle trained and all. So we laughed at them, couldn't do anything else. Anyhow, the funniest part while we was down there, I was learnt a trade of a rigger, aero rigger, that was building aircraft, building all the, not the engines, but all the airframes and all those, to build all that. And we passed out there, and when we usually go get our money, you know, in the Navy, they got a place mark where the officer said, cap. You put your cap down there, and they throw your money in it, you see. As they got the old jaunty down the road, on the end of the line there, with a pair of naught-naughts clippers, air clippers. If you didn't get by there in less than time, he'd run it over your head. See? So anyway, we got those Air Force Flying Corps caps on. Of course, when we put it on, they used to close up. Of course, we always was getting caught with this flipping thing. See? Anyhow, I was down there for about 6 weeks, I think. I passed out. And then we was posted, you see. And went up to Blandford. And that time of day, it was in after the March push. And when we got to Blandford, there's only 200 of us, you know.
So where is this, in France now?
No, Blandford, in
Dorset,
England.
In Dorset, yeah.
And when we got there, you see, we looked at these poor old chaps, 55 and that, we'd been called up in the army. So we said to the old, why can't we go over? We're young, let us go. He said, you can't go, you're too young. I said, yes, we can. Come on. So he said, I'm going to see the CO. So the CO said, all right, they can do this in our jobs in France. All right, pick 800 and send them. And I was one of the 100. And I left there and went to Boulogne and got on a side wheeler, paddle boat.
Oh, paddle boat.
Went over to Boulogne. But on the way over, she stopped. I said, what the hell's on here then? So they said, look, we packed on there, you couldn't move. The mine just gone by us. So anyhow, we get into Boulogne. We goes up to the rest camp. He's up there not very long. And I was sent to 2ASD, which was a depot for building aircraft, and a pilot's pool. That was all there in one place. I went down there building and repairing aircraft and that. And the pilot's pool was next to us. We used to see them come out there, 19 and 20 boys. And then he'd done 4 hours solo flying and going out on the front line. And let me describe to you the aircraft. The aircraft, you know, was made of wood. And that canvas all together. Well, if I tell you the bomb sight. Now, you know all the paraphernalia you got now. But all there was in the cockpits, at the pilot's feet, was a piece of glass like that, magnifying glass. And there was 1, 2, 3, 4 wires across. And in with him, he got 3 20-pound bombs on one side and 3 20-pound bombs on the other. And he used the joystick, we had a chain from there, so fixed on there and keep the joystick steady. And he got the rudder bar down there, throttle on that side. And he used to have to watch. When he sees target there, he used to pick a bomb off the side there and throw it over.
This is a window in the bottom of the aircraft.
It's just a bit of magnifying glass in the bottom.
In the floor, yeah.
In the floor.
Yeah.
Well, now, all these aircraft that were there, they were DH-9s and DH-9As, and I used to build SE-5s. I knew Colonel McCudden. I knew him. In fact, I used to curse him because he used to fly over the hangars. And everybody else I knew out there. But while I was there, you see, what's name was pushing up. They was coming, I don't know if you know France, we was here, and they was coming right round the back of us like that. Right round
to the south of you.
Right, going right round the back, trying to push us into the sea. Yeah. Amiens, Doulon, Bapaume, Albert, all round that spot there.
That was the German counter-offensive.
Yes, that was the counter-offensive in March.
You want to drink a tea, Harold, before it gets cold?
Yes, all right. It was in March. All right. Anyhow, we used to, my stand there, and they had a, I always remember one machine they had brought out to us during the war. It was an experimental machine. The engine was 96 horsepower. It was called an RE8. You know what we called it? RE Tate, after the comedian. And it had a short wing at the bottom and a long wing at the top, and the exhaust from the engine went up the centre section. Of course, as you know, in every centre section was a gravity tank, because we used to swing the propellers, you see. And they used to have to let there was no mechanical pumps working at all. The pumps was by wind, See, so we had to get the engines going, and to break into that now, I'll just tell you how we used to do it. You see, we get the pilot, you get the chocks under the aircraft. You've got two wings, skids. You've got a skid on the back. Right. You send out the pilot, switch off, sir, switch off. Suck in, you used to suck the petrol in from the tank up there. Right. Switch on, sir. All right, switch on. Then the three of you used to get hold, one used to get hold of the propeller, the other one used to catch hold of your wrists. You never caught hold of hands. You could let go, see? Like that. And said, right, contact. And used to pull it out like that to get it to go. And then after that, see, and on the, all on the aerodrome we had was what we used to call a nasty word. We used to call it a French letter. It was a C. That's all we had. We had no signal stations. We had no wireless. We had nothing. Used to come in as they could. And we used to have to go down to meet them and bring them in. They never come up on their own.
They didn't taxi in.
No, no. We just used to come, go down the other way because we never knew what... They got a wheel puncture in one of the wheels because it fixed undercarriages. We used to get her in the skid and pick her up so she'd come back on that one. Anyhow, that was it.
What was the name of this aerodrome? Do you remember?
What, the what?
The aerodrome. What was the name of it where you were?
Three ASD.
3ASD.
Yeah. Of course, you used to test the aircraft there before they went up. Line. Anyhow, I had a bit of a time there. And anyhow, after the war, we're going to...
Did you go flying at all? Did you actually...
Not up? Much there. I done more... Most. I'll tell you where I done most of my time in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
I got a shilling a day when I first joined up. Shilling a week.
Shilling a week, yeah.
But over there, I was getting a shilling a day. Anyhow, when the war...
You remembered McCudden, didn't you?
I remember... Oh, well, yes, I knew him well.
What was he like as a person?
Oh, he was a blackguard. Oh, he used to blind and swear. He used to fly an FE-2B. If he saw an hangar open, he'd go through it. He used to go galloping over the same, over there. He had a little pom-pom gun in the front. He had a nacelle type, boom, the engine at the back of him. And, you know, he met a very silly end. He was coming home on leave. Taxi sunk in the channel.
What, on the boat?
No, in the aircraft sunk.
Crashed
in the channel. And that's the last year of him. Anyhow, while I was in there, I had some funny experiences, but I can't tell you any of them.
Go on, why not?
No, because there was some of them, you know, the old sergeant used to take me up to the brothels and all sorts of places as that. He used to say, come on, Harold, come up with me. And he's taking the, used to have a sentry on Brussels there, on the brothels of that. And all the people, you know, all the people. But there was one thing there that we, I can't never forget. At Albert's, in Albert, the cathedral had been hit, but there was an angel, a statue, on the top, and that was hanging over, you know, up there on this ability. And they said, when that fell down, at the end of the war. I never knew where it fell down or nothing. I never knew. But anyhow. I used to go down to Burke Plage. That was a nice place we used to go to. Anyway, we had a nasty time there because we got bombed and bloody, you know, out every night bombing. And
really, the Germans had a lot of planes flying in those.
Oh, we had a lot of planes flying in there. You couldn't move for them, and they had to wait for one another. Come down so far.
The enemy planes used to get
over. Oh, yes, the airplanes come over after us. We had trenches all around the hangars.
But this was well behind the lines, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. It wasn't very far from the lines. Not when they was down at Albert and Bapoom and Doolans, all down there, no. It was only about 50 or 60 miles, that's all. Anyhow, I got over that lot all right. Well, after the war was over, on the armistice terms, they had to hand all the aircraft over to us to test.
All the German ones?
All the German ones. And I was on the aerodrome one day, and we had a Rumpler. That was a German aircraft. So the pilot said to me, you built this one, didn't you? I said, yes, I did. Why? Well, is he coming up? Oh, I said, don't mind. All right, come up. So we did. We ain't got up very far before we bloody wing dropped off and we crashed. I woke up in Doolan's hospital 32 hours later.
How high were you when it happened?
Well, we don't know, about 1,000 feet over. And I don't remember nothing. Never remember hitting the ground. Never remember nothing. All I know, I woke up in Doolan's hospital. I was all plastered up. Bound up, you know. And what happened to the pilot? I don't know. I never heard. Anyhow, then towards the end, I've been in hospital about so and so. You know what the field hospitals are like. See you when they can. Anyhow, they sent me down to EJAPS. I was to be sent home. All stretcher cases were to go back to Blighty. So
they sent you down where? First of all,
down at Range of Flyers. At EJAPS. Yeah. In hospital, EJAPS.
Yeah.
That's near Boulogne.
I know, yeah.
And that's where that ship comes in. And they said, you've got to go home. I said, all right. I got no kid, I lost a lot. Never see any more of it. Pay book or nothing. Not that went. So anyhow, takes me out, and they started carrying me down the gangway on this ship. And I looked over on the hatchway, it was my uncle sitting there. My uncle was sitting on the gangway. So he went up and told the captain I was there. Of course, I made a lot of fuss on me. Well, anyhow, we got into the hospital train at Boulogne. You know where they have me. And they got me in on a bed. My sister said to me, you're in a state. I said, so would you be. I said, I ain't been touched for a fortnight. She said, what? I said, no. She said, come on, let's get some of this clothes off of this dirt. So I said, all right. And I then this hand was bandaged, strapped, in one bandage strapped across me with cotton wool under there and cotton wool under my arm, yeah, and all strapped up, you see. She said, well, I don't know, she said, we'd have to take that strap off and bandage you properly, you know.
Where was this, in Boulogne?
No, in getting on the train to go to the hospital in England.
Oh, in England, yes, yeah.
And she said, I'm going to have to take that muscle off your arm so we can get something done, she said. So I said, all right. So she started to pull. I said, for God's sake, don't pull like that. Pull it off. And she went, wah! God, blimey. Anyhow, we got into London. There's another part I left. Out on the platform on your stretchers. Along come to all these little women. A cup of tea, a cigarette, you know, and all this kind of thing. So I wanted to get in the hospital. And you know that when I got to one of the bank, they put us in these ambulances, four of them. Field ambulances with the cloth, oh no, all the cloth, and they opened the back so all the people in London could see us. And I was took to Hampstead Infirmary. That's where I was took. Put there. Sent there. First thing, I fell out with the orderly first time. You're in a state. I said, so you be if you bloody well just come from where I've come from. Then in a bath. I said, I know that. Well, get in a bath, anyhow.
You hadn't had a bath all the time since the accident?
No. No, nothing. So, anyhow, I got fixed up and got settled up. They got all me. I had to take. The only thing I had with me was a photograph, X-ray photograph, to show where I'd been injured. And anyway, I got there, and I was in there for some time. And so they said, "Look, you're well enough now. Your arm." When they took the bandage off my arm, it went like that, useless. I was like, "My God." And my leg, they walked me when the leg got my legs working all right. So they said, well, we're going to send you to a convalescent home in Golders Green. So I said, all right. It's a VAD. Oh, it's a lovely place. And there's an empire. I don't know if you know Golders Green. You know the Golders Green Empire?
Well, the Hippodrome.
Hippodrome.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow. We sat there, all them seats round there. There's a Lions tea shop was opposite there. All the seats there were marked for the wounded. And I sat there one day, I see somebody coming along. God, blimey, I said. What are you doing here, Ralph? It was Ralph Reeder. He went to school with me in New Haven. He got a game show on down there. Huh? So anyhow, what's the matter? Running out.